Staley. Steve Staley is a physician. He specializes in sports medicine. We give you a bunch of information at the end of this segment about Mr. Staley and how to get in touch with him, and why you might want to see him if you're not a big fan of unnecessary surgeries or particular medications. He's got some other ways to do things. Ladies and gentlemen, say hello to the man who's going to answer a lot of legal questions for you today, Scott Sherman.
Thank you, Frank.
You were in the green room since 10 o'clock. What in the world? What were they doing in there to you?
There's a long line, so that could take me about noon. But after I got in, I got the hot rock treatment, and I got the body massage treatment, the non-Florida body massage treatment. And there's a hot tub. There's a mud pack.
Mud pack?
There's a mud pit in there,
That's
too.
The fudge
you can actually
pack.
Sit. Oh, fudge pack.
That's not the one.
That's in the back room.
I go to.
It's in the far back room.
I thought the green room. That's the brown room.
Well, you sure look like you're ready to help people. You're relaxed. And if you're ready to go, I'm ready to go. The smart people have already called. There's one line that's open. So, folks, you know the numbers. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Jeff was smart enough to jump right in there. Jeff, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott.
Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Hi. I'm in the PM.
Close enough.
And I do want to thank Frank for Terry Daly. That's pretty nice of you.
I was happy to reunite with him, I guess would be the best way to put it.
Outstanding. My question is, can people record an employee at work? I mean, as far as, say, an employee recording a manager?
Can I keep you sure? You're talking about having a microphone hidden in the workplace that they don't know about?
Yeah, just a disgruntled employee and recording a manager.
In the state of Missouri, you can record...
And I'm in Illinois.
Okay, then, Scott, you're going to have to take that. I don't know the Illinois law. I know that in Missouri, if one of the two parties knows they're being recorded, you can do it. I know that in a workplace, you can't plant microphones. You can put cameras anywhere in the workplace, but a restroom, we talked about this the other day, showers, changing room, you can put cameras throughout the workplace, but you can't put microphones. You can't record audio. Now, if you're in a meeting or on the phone, in Missouri, if one of the two knows it's being recorded, then it's legal. Scott, Illinois, I don't know.
Yeah, Frank does a pretty good analysis, actually. I'll walk through some of the more complex details of it, but Missouri, as Frank said, is a one-party state, meaning if you're in a conversation and you tape record it without telling the other person, but you know it, and it's about a conversation that has to do with you, that's okay. Illinois is a two-party state, meaning both parties need to give consent, so surreptitious taping is not okay. Now, there's some cases that say that Illinois is sort of a two-party state and sort of a one-party state, but I wouldn't risk it. I would say until further notice, Illinois is a two-party state. So no, you cannot tape record a conversation that the other person does not know is being recorded, no matter what about.
If there's more than two, can it be recorded?
No. So let's say the disgruntled employee or the employee is having a conversation with the manager, and nobody knows, or the manager doesn't know, that it's being recorded. And that conversation is not okay because the manager doesn't know it's being taped. Now, there might be a thread the needle on it with respect to it being employment or if it's involving some crime, but I wouldn't risk it. In a one-party state, go for it. In a two-party state, it's a problem.
Jeff, if your question is if you're recording three or four people having a conversation, is that okay? And the answer is no. It's not just two.
Right. That's,
three or
that's
four.
There's a gentleman and then that recorded a conversation with seven people
at a meeting, And nobody but that person, but the gentleman knew about it.
Exactly.
My understanding is in Illinois that's illegal. That's not okay. Now,
is it scottsherman.com?
No.
Well,
I'll tell you. If you're ready, I can tell you. Ready or not, here it comes.
I am ready.
All right. LawOfficeOfScottSherman@gmail.com.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that's...
I'll give you a couple little scenarios where it is okay. When there's no expectation of privacy, let's say that there's a camera above in the ceiling in the room where the meeting was being held, and everybody knows that, that's an open place, it's not in a toilet or something somewhere, and that those... there's a sign that says, warning, subject to recording and... audio recording or whatever, some kind of notice, then that's okay. But if the guy walks into a meeting in Illinois and he's got his smartphone in his pocket and everybody's talking and he's recording it without telling anybody, even if it's about him, in the state of Illinois, my understanding is that's not okay. That's illegal.
And actually, it was a safety meeting.
Doesn't matter what it's about. But so there are ways to have recordings of meetings without everyone's consent. Notice would be that. Or if he walked in and he said, you know what, I'm going to tape all of you. And they're like, sure you are. I got a tape. Okay.
And then you put it on the table or something, right in the middle of the table?
He just leaves it in his pocket, but he's put him on notice. That tacit sort of, I guess, acquiescence to the fact that he's made that announcement could say that that's consent. You don't have to get somebody to sign some sort of affidavit that says it's okay. But there are also things that no matter what the notice says, it's not okay. Remember Chuck Berry? I mean, he's the godfather of rock and roll. He's also a guy that taped people in the toilet. I mean, you can't say a sign, warning, my bathrooms have cameras in them, in the ladies' room. You know, so there are certain places where no matter what the notice is, that's not okay.
I'm guessing that in Jeff's case, saying there's a camera, a recorder in the room, I just want you to know you're being recorded, is not what he's looking for. I'm guessing this has already been recorded, Jeff.
Somebody walked into this meeting with a camera, with a recorder in their pocket. Things were said at the meeting, and that person is now saying, aha, I've got a tape.
Look what I got.
And
that's what it is. It's sour grapes, and it's a disgruntled employee, you know.
It could be, you know, sweet, sweet wine. Whatever the reason, two-party means...
The gentleman that said that said stuff there, now it's EEO violation, but...
Well, that...
Really, it wasn't EEO violation, but...
That's, you know, the subject or the nature of how that information was obtained is going to be up to the folks at the EEOC or whatever. But I think that the other participants in that meeting could go to the police and say, I was taped without my knowledge. Illinois is a two-party state. I want to make a police report because
you can be sued for recording them.
You can be sued, and it's a crime. Ask Linda Tripp. Remember her from the Clinton thing? She was recording
the
Lewinsky
pretty lady?
Chick. Oh, she's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
She's not beautiful. But
so what about that? What about this, Jeff? What you're looking for is you want to prove that this guy said this stuff. So let me ask Scott, as an attorney, why couldn't you summon or subpoena these people to give a deposition under oath, saying this guy, here's what this guy said. They heard it. They were there. You know they were. You got the recording.
Sure.
Then you got what you need.
That's right. The other side
what
is
what he said is probably might not be a violation. It just said it was recorded illegally.
The act of recording is a crime. It's also subject, as Frank said, to a civil violation of an invasion of privacy. It also could be that the subject, the words that were illegally taped could be banned from any proceeding, or they could be used as the basis for, I don't know, some kind of other investigation. But if you or someone you know, and don't say it, was subject to, in Illinois, what would be an illegal taping, meaning you did not give your consent, then you would have the right to say, hey, I'm the victim of being illegally taped, the police, I don't like it, or a lawsuit against this person. But then
no one knew that it was taped the EEO called.
The one guy knew, and in Missouri
knew,
other first-party states, that would have been fine. What's never fine is planting something and leaving the room. That's never okay. But when I say, and Frank clarified it, I think, very well, when I say two-party state, I mean all parties to the conversation have to give their consent. And if they don't, then the person that taped, unless they gave proper notice that it was being taped or obtained their consent in some other way, that is not only a civil offense subject to litigation, but is a crime.
Very good. Okay. Very good. I mean,
all right, Jeff.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Very nice.
I appreciate that. Thank you. All right, folks, 314, there's a line open, 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. In all the years, that's our first, I think our first, can I record a conversation question?
It's a great question.
It is, and well, we'll go to Tom, and then if we have a little lull, I'll tell you the only time I ever illegally recorded anybody, but was for a very good reason. Tom is next. Tom, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hi, Scott.
Hello, Tom.
I'm AM in the PM.
Thank you.
Question. A friend of mine had to do a 30-day work release in the county jail. And the whole 30 days, he had to sleep on the floor. Does he have any recourse?
There's more and more of Frank, do you want to take a...
Yeah, I know the jails are overcrowded. I think that's like inhumane or something. I would think he would, but that's
I'm glad you said that, because there is a particular municipal jail in this town in St. Louis County that I won't name, but is famous or infamous for their speed traps. That has, and I don't know how or why or what the U.S. attorney is doing, why this place is still in even allowed to exist. But there are minimum standards for housing people, because, yeah, you know, they're criminals, sure. But the question I would have for Tom is the 30-day work release, was that part of his sentence that your friend had to do? Was that while he was sort of waiting for, I guess it would be a sentence. He wasn't waiting for his court date. You break it into two different categories. If you are what's called a pretrial detainee, meaning you have not been, your case has not been adjudicated, you're presumed to be innocent. And there are people that stay in these municipal jails, some of them, you might know the one I'm talking about, have people that have not even been convicted or even pled to a crime that live in the worst conditions. I mean, it's like a third world country. And then that's the Fifth Amendment. You have a right not to, as an innocent person with due process, not to be subjected to that. But even when you're convicted, it turns over to the Eighth Amendment, and that's cruel and unusual punishment. To sleep on a concrete floor, I bet this floor isn't a shag carpet with a heated floor. You know, it's probably just like, here you go, and here's a sheet, and it's 25 degrees outside, and go F yourself, and you know, here's your Egg McMuffin, which, you know, Mike, that sounds good.
That sounds actionable to me, and yeah. I'll tell you why. It's, in a sense, it's almost torture. If the guy's not a murderer, you know, if he had murdered a whole family or something, I don't think anybody would care if he had to sleep on the floor. It's a 30-day thing. He couldn't have done anything that bad.
No.
I think it seems like torture to me.
It does, and even if you're convicted of something that's terrible, like El Chapo, right, he's the worst person in the world, and he's going to go to Supermax, and his bed's going to be made out of concrete, they litigate the you-know-what out of that stuff for the worst people possible. But for the guy whose tags were expired, who has to sleep on a concrete floor and freeze almost to death and be subjected to that, is beyond punishment. It's cruel punishment, and it's weird punishment. And I would say, if your friend was subjected to that, and other people were, there are lawyers that will take up civil rights cases against those. Now, for people to say they got what they deserved, understand this. Nobody who goes to jail did something great. But everybody that goes to jail is also given and afforded the constitutional rights that the country's founded on. The Eighth Amendment is one of the big ten.
You know? I have a question. If you got an attorney, he said, "Hey, I had to sleep on the floor." Now, how do you prove that he slept on the floor?
They have cameras in these places. There's the floor. There's the guy. Plus, they testify under oath. Now, if the guy's a perjurer, fraudster, or something, yes, credibility is an issue. But you find the list of people who say, "Where were you sleeping?"
And I was going to ask
on that, the floor.
I was going to ask that same question Frank just asked, and I had a follow up question to that, which is, even if you do prove it, how do you prove damages? How do you prove that you were? What damages are proven?
The damages are the I don't want to say the wrong. Say it the wrong way because I get people all the time.
PTSD, possibly.
No, you just it's the
psychological
inhabitability of the place, the cruelty and the unusualness of it in and of itself. The thing itself speaks for itself. Let's say this. Let's say that part of it is, hey, we're really overcrowded and we're going to do like Joe Arpaio in Arizona. We're going to have a tent city and it's 12 degrees outside. Well, if you're sleeping outside and you don't get frostbite, you're still sleeping outside in 12 degree temperatures. So it's not worth, you know, $10 million, but the very act of having the cruelty or the unusualness that violates the Eighth Amendment, the violation of your civil rights, is the harm in and of itself. And if you have physical or psychological damages on top of it, that would be it. But the proof is not what the severity of the damages are, like a car accident case. The proof is the violation of the minimum standard by which these places house their pretrial detainees under the Fifth and their house guests or convicts or inmates under the Eighth, after they've been convicted and sentenced.
So the short answer is this guy needs to get a lawyer.
Yeah, he does. Okay. And that lawyer is going to have a hard time because the standard is a violation of your civil rights, which is much higher than it would be if they just, let's say you went to a hotel and you rented a room and you went in, there's no bed and there's just a concrete floor with like a sheet. And they're like, well, that's it. And you could sue them for breach of contract and damages. So it's much tougher to do, but it's kind of the only way the stuff gets fixed is doing that. And I want to walk a fine line. Not everyone who goes to jail deserves, you know, 5-star accommodations. You know, sleeping in a metal bunk bed and having sort of a rubber mattress and eating, you know, the worst kind of hospital food that they serve, that's not necessarily cruel and unusual punishment. It can't be nicer than, you know, the people that aren't in prison, but it can't be, you know, a Turkish prison. Yeah.
And actually, it was on the way, I guess, just as you come out of the shower room, is right where he was sleeping, right next to it. So, you know, you got people tracking feces and you know, what you're
they were pooping. They were pooping in the shower.
Well, you never know.
It is jail.
I'm sure they were. I'm sure they weren't. But you know, the toilet is in there, and you know, there's urine on the floor.
Let me ask you a question. Do you know, was he the only one on the floor, or were there a lot of other people?
No. There was 8 people on the floor.
Oh, that's a good group. I'd like to talk to them.
Holy cow.
Hey, Frank,
you know what? If they did something like that in an animal shelter, everybody'd be all up in arms.
That's right.
You know, a dog certainly can sleep on the floor, but if the equivalent was done to an animal, let's say they didn't give it any water or something, people would go crazy. I don't think anybody, right, especially somebody whose crime was so minimal they only had to do 30 days. The guy didn't murder anybody.
Right. And
didn't have to sleep on the
floor.
And
what's good about this is this isn't one of those cases where the guy said, you know, I have a religious food a restriction and you're not getting me my just kind of to screw with everybody. I mean, this is a minimum standard of humanity to not sleep in a apparently feces and urine infested wet concrete floor near the shower of grown men out in the open. I mean, that's really not the place that
Tom just said. Tom just said it was work release. So here's a claim. How can you go to work and be a job when you slept on the floor all night?
Plus,
wouldn't the
people that are at that job or the customers be subjected to possible toxic infestation of what was on that floor? The guy could be bringing all kinds of cholera or the one when they don't wash their hands that they spread E. coli? Yeah, it's just disgusting, And it's definitely something that, I mean, I'd love to look at that and find you somebody for that one.
There's a case here. So to wrap it up, he needs a lawyer. Do you have Scott's email address, Tom?
LawOfficeOfScottSherman@gmail.com.
Bingo.
And how long ago was it, Tom?
It was
1947.
No. It was just last month. Half of January, half February.
Very good. That's perfect.
It sounds like something would have happened in about 1816 or something.
It's like Papillon or something.
Tom, good luck. Thank you for the call. Thank you for listening, too.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. Line is open, 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255.
Frank, can I steal Scott for a
I was going to steal
Scott for a quick one, if that's all right.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
I had a guy contact me, and I don't know what answer to this. He was arrested for a DUI in Peavey, and he alleges that he was mistreated during the processing of his DUI. He filed an open records request for video of the actual interrogation room where they made him blow into the breathalyzer devices there at the police station. They are refusing to release that video to him. Does he have a right to see that, or does he have to have a lawyer request that in discovery once the process begins? Because as of now, he hasn't hired a lawyer.
He could get it in discovery as the defense, or his lawyer could. You don't have to have a lawyer, but as part of the
he followed under a Sunshine Law request, not as a discovery request.
No, the Sunshine Law request wouldn't apply to him because he's the defendant. He doesn't need that. There's an easier way to do it. Just make a discovery request under the rules of evidence, and they got to give that stuff up. If they don't give it up, that would be a spoliation of evidence and would probably help him win his case.
Good advice.
But to get it, if you're accused of something, you're the insider. You're the defendant. You get all kinds of rights under the Fifth Amendment. If you're an outsider, your only real recourse is the First Amendment under something like the Sunshine Act or something like that.
But I, as an outsider, wouldn't have a right to that video because it's still an open investigation, right?
Well, you could under the First Amendment. And it's not just members of the press. It's members of society that have the right to see what's going on under.
But it's an open investigation. They wouldn't release that.
They wouldn't necessarily have to do that. But to the defendant or his counsel, yes. So sometimes the Fifth Amendment trumps in the rock, paper, scissors the First, and that would be in criminal investigations.
So he filed the wrong
document. You can't get it if it's an ongoing investigation. But once you're charged, if you're not charged, you can't say, give me the police report and let me see all this, or let me see what's going on in the grand jury. But once you're charged, then all those due process rights under the Fifth Amendment apply.
So he's representing himself pro se, which I advise him against.
He might be a stupid kind of guy, because that's really stupid to do.
Okay.
But he's real smart, except he's kind of stupid.
All right.
That's so a terrible thing to do.
Steve, you're next. As soon as I give the phone numbers again, because we still have a line open, and somebody real smart will jump in here and take advantage of free legal advice. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Steve, thank you for being patient and waiting. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hey, Scott Sherman.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
Good. I'm AM and PM.
Thank you.
My question is, I was pulled over in Herman County. I guess there was a speed trap because it was in the middle of the night. I'm a truck driver, and it was a 50 mile per hour back roads, and then all of a sudden I get into Herman County, it turns into 25.
Is that a real county, or is Herman actually in Gasconade County?
Is it Herman? Is it
Gasconade County? I think is where Herman is.
No, it's down there like Osage Beach and stuff like that.
Wow. I mean, that might be right. I think
it's Herman.
Let's just say Herman. But
it's in Herman. Whatever.
Okay.
It was 50 miles per hour going on these side roads, and all of a sudden you go into this county, and it goes into 25. And I'm assuming the cop was standing parked right by that speed limit sign. At what point is it when I pass that 25 mile marker or that speed sign that I can get a ticket for speeding, or is it when I see that sign in the distance that I can get that
this
ticket?
This is a great question. That's a great question. Because you're in a 50 and then you're in a 25. What's the mark? What's the point where you're required to slow down?
I got screwed.
Frank, if you look up, if you see the sign, you've got to be given a reasonable amount of time to slow down to 25. How far past the sign were you when he got you?
I it felt like it was, you know, like 5 seconds after I passed that sign, I see a cop behind me. I'm like, what the heck?
If that's true and you can prove it, I think you got this one, and this is the ball's in your court, and you're going to win this, but I'm going to let Scott take it.
There's a place on the way to the Ozarks, which has a monument to one of my favorite people, Winston Churchill, and it's in Callaway County. And that if this isn't the place, boy, this sure sounds like it. All of these speed trap places like Callaway County all come from the scam that a lot of these North County little municipalities do, where they were taking money from people, especially on their way to tourist things like the lake. The notes, to answer your question, I would argue that the speed limit area zone does not change until that sign, the geography of that sign. Like, it's almost like just because you can see the border, well, I see there, I can go up in the arch and I can see over to Illinois or whatever. That doesn't mean you're in Illinois. So I would say that sign, that's the beginning of where the from 50 to 25 or whatever this is changes, not when you can see it, because people can see it at different distances. But once you've crossed that in an unreasonable differential of speed, I think that they technically have you, especially when they have these judges like they do in Callaway County who are real horse manure. And I've been there, and I have represented people on kid, you know, the college students that go to this Westminster University, which is, I guess, a pretty good school, or go to the Lake of the Ozarks to spend their money in Missouri or spend it down in these places. And I just think that people get mistreated by these judges and these prosecutors. So, to answer your technical legal question, where the sign is, that's the change. Just like this is the state line. But,
okay. Unless I have an exception.
Okay.
Unless, and we've all seen this. Let's say you're driving along, and all of a sudden you're in 50 mile per hour zone, and all of a sudden it's 25, but you don't know it is until you see a sign that has been blocked by a tree branch, or you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
It's like by the time you see it, you can't possibly slow down to 25 when that sign is next to you.
That's
and
right.
You just crossed over.
That's
it.
Right.
It all comes down to when were you able to see the sign, because sometimes they're not visible till you're right on them, and you got to be given time to slow down.
And you've got to believe that was this a county sheriff's deputy and not highway patrol?
Yes.
Okay, good. This is the real horse manure part of it. They know exactly what the reaction time to somebody who's not familiar with that area is a speed trap. That is the definition of a speed trap. There used to be a place, and then they had a law. They took the city away because they were doing it. Something Burks or Perks. Boy, Frank, it's out by the Lake of the Ozarks. It used to be. And they changed the law based on the percentage of the revenue that they could get from speeding tickets onto the town. And it was a big thing a couple years ago when they were doing all the reforms. But
you remember South County, St. George?
Oh, yeah.
Right there, they were.
Well, yeah, Bella Villa is like that. I mean, you just name these terrible places. But this place was the one that really got it started, and they took away the charter of this whole town because everything was a speed trap. It was at the bottom of a hill. You couldn't slow your vehicle down. There really wasn't any notice, and it was a real gotcha. And they ran their town for 40 years based on this speed trap. But that is a pure definition of a speed trap. The thing to do if you got that ticket, and I guess you haven't taken care of it. First of all, you don't want to get any points. And did I miss it, but are you a CDL holder?
Yes.
Okay, you absolutely cannot have points.
I know. I got to take care of this.
I will get you. If you want somebody, I'll get you some people that can handle that stuff. This one, work through it. But the best way to embarrass these people is take pictures of this sign the next time you're there, somebody, and just go on Facebook or Twitter or call the TV station and just embarrass these people, because the only thing you can do when there's a speed trap is to expose it as much as you can, because they're making money off of it, and they're absolutely taking advantage of people and stealing money from them. And for them to have the nerve, and I don't know if it's Callaway County or you know where this, you know where this thing is.
Max Creek.
It was Herman County.
Max Creek, and somebody called and said, could it be Henry County?
No, it's Herman. Okay. I just looked it up.
Okay.
Max Creek is on the way to Jefferson City, I think. Max Creek is exactly the town that no longer exists, and the only reason they no longer exist is that people went to the newspapers and made a huge deal out of this complete con speed trap and stole money from thousands of people with the threat of their insurance rates going up or losing their whole livelihood if you're a CDL holder, if you get enough points, getting fired. It's a disgrace. Now, there are people that speed and they're dangerous, but when you have a highway that goes from 50 to 25 in the blink of an eye, that's not fair, and that shouldn't
exist. No, especially when you're in a big truck, it's harder to slow those down than it is a regular car.
Steve, let me ask you a question. Did you just flat out not see the sign?
Well, no, it's middle of the night. It's like 3 in the morning, and so I'm cruising along on this, going 50 miles per hour. Then all suddenly, I see a cop behind me right when I see that sign.
So you didn't see the sign when it changed to 25.
No, I mean I didn't see it in the distance, but when I was passing it, I saw it.
Was there
that's
a sign?
Why, that's why I saw it slowing down.
Did the sheriff deputy or the deputy tell you that there was a warning sign maybe 3 or 4 miles earlier? Hey, warning! The speed reduces.
There is no warning.
See,
sign.
That would be fair if they gave you a warning 4 or 5 miles in advance. That look, there's a quick reduction and there's a zero tolerance. At least that's some kind of decent warning or one of those signs on the side of the road that have the.
And the only way I knew it was coming up is it said Herman County ahead, So I know when you go into those residential, areas, small towns, that you have to definitely slow down to 35 to 25. But I thought it was like a gradual thing, too, where they say, okay, from 50, you go to 45 to 45. 35.
We've all seen signs that say reduce speed ahead, or speed zone ahead. You don't always get that luxury, though. So let me ask you one more question, Steve. I'm just curious. You didn't see the sign until you were up on it. Is that your fault? I mean, in other words, you could have seen it from, 300 yards back or 200
yards. Yeah, I definitely could have seen it.
You just didn't. By the time you saw it, that's a tough one to win because they're just going to say, well, you should have been paying attention. You had plenty of time to slow down by the time you got there. That was my main question.
The good news is, how far back in that sign do I have to really slow down?
I would say the good news is that if the object is to keep points off your record, especially as a CDL holder, they'll probably deal on that. That's not going to help your bank account. But my concern from your question is not that you can't figure out how to get out of those points. You probably can. But what is the proper amount of notice? And I would say that... And also the boundary. I would say where that stop sign is planted, that's where that speed limit zone starts. But if it's something where you cannot see it in a reasonable amount of time.
Until you don't have enough time to slow down.
Right, and then they've got a deputy sitting there in a patrol car to write everybody up. That is the classic Max Creek speed trap. And little towns like that better be careful because they think it's funny, this... stuff that Boss Hogg used to run, but Max Creek doesn't exist anymore, and they were the ones that started this, and they overplayed their hand. Pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. So if you don't like the way you think you were treated unfair, get the points off, and then go public with it and see if people agree with you. Put stuff on Facebook or Twitter or call a TV station or a newspaper. I don't like them taking advantage of people like that. That's not safety. That's revenue flow. and ask.
Yeah, I can see if they're like a half mile ahead, you know, waiting for people, and they're still speeding. But if sitting right by at that sign, I just think that's not right.
No, that's pretty low.
And some of these police these little North County municipalities, they don't have police departments anymore because they overplayed their hand. And that's a good thing because they shouldn't run a town based on money from tourists and truck drivers and other people that are just passing through, not really doing anything unreasonable. It's not like you were going through there and, you know, shooting up their stop signs with like, a shotgun or something. You're just driving a truck.
Yeah.
All right. So, Steve, if you need any other questions answered, do you know Scott's email address?
Yeah, it's Law Office of Scott Sherman at gmail.com.
There it is. That's it.
Good job.
Well, good luck.
Sorry.
Good luck, Steve.
Thanks.
Okay, you bet. All right, we have all the lines open. I'm going to talk about Scott's sponsor for just a minute here. And if nobody wants to call and jump in and get free legal advice, we'll just close it out and move along and head for the news. 314-821-0590. I'll repeat it. This is your only chance. We're going to move on if you don't jump in here. 314-821-0590 or 855-282-8255. Scott Sherman is brought to you every Thursday by Dr. Steve Staley. Dr. Staley is a sports medicine physician. His specialty is shoulders and knees. I will actually see him in spring into summer. I got some other issues I got to get taken care of before that. And after I get that done, I want him to take a look at my knee. I've got a knee issue. It's not something horrible. There's a name for it, and I wrote it down somewhere. It's one of those, you know, medical long names. It's where the tendon attaches to the kneecap or something, and hurts like crazy. He does other hard to treat injuries too. He loves working with people who have arthritis, and letting them know and showing them that there are non-surgical treatments. He's a big promoter of PRP, which is platelet-rich plasma, and then some other new sort of cutting-edge techniques. And he offers the PRP treatments to active military for half off. If you will mention this segment, and you are active military, just say that. I'm sure we want to see your active military card. Half off the PRP treatments. 314-909-1666. That's 314-909-1666, or drstevestaley.com, which is drstevestahle, and you go, I can't remember that. You don't have to. Go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/AMandThePM, and you'll see Dr. Staley's info and that he is the sponsor of Scott Sherman. Don, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hello to Scott Sherman.
Hello, Scott Sherman.
Hello, Don.
AM in the PM.
Thank you very much.
Hey, listen, I bought a piece of property down at the Lake of the Ozarks, and I found out that the previous owner had had problems with one of the neighbors in regards to property lines. They had both had separate or different survey companies do a stake survey on the properties. And there were some discrepancies as far as where one survey company said the lines were and where the other one said the lines were. So the question is whether, is it illegal for somebody to pull the stakes out of the ground that the survey companies had put there?
Wow, that's a good question.
Yeah,
I would.
Yeah.
But you can't leave them there forever. I mean, can't leave stakes in there.
Are you saying that somebody, the other, say, let's say the neighbor pulled them out and moved them, or that
they didn't move them? They just. Well, I don't know whether they're gone or if they just pulled the caps off the things. They were metal stakes that were driven in the ground.
That's different.
They had the little metal or the plastic caps on them.
Yeah, well,
so that you could see them.
I think Frank was thinking what I was thinking, which is those wooden stakes that they sort of drive in during the process of closing a house sale.
Yeah.
But if they went to the actual boundary line caps, the metal stakes, and moved those, absolutely. It's
by the way, that's the greatest thing that could have ever happened to you,
yes.
Don, is that this knucklehead neighbor did that. And if you can prove he did it, wow. You've got a tremendous advantage in this argument because he's obviously real nervous about what your survey guy showed and where the line was, according to him, that he went out and moved it and removed it. I mean, yeah, can't do that.
And you have another benefit, and that's this. The title company for the real estate that you purchased stands behind everything about the title, including the actual boundary and footage of that piece of real estate. So if you buy a piece of property and they have the legal description, which is, you know, 3/4 of a mile to the northeast to a stake, and then, you know, the 1/8 of a mile, 400 feet to the right to an oak tree, you know, that kind of stuff that nobody really reads. When you buy your house or whatever you bought at the lake, you're buying that legal description. Anything different than that, and if you were sold something that turns out that that's not right, the title company didn't figure that out when there's a dispute, you would have an action against the title company for not giving you clear title.
Yeah, so, I wonder how often this happens if two legitimate survey companies come out and come up with two different results.
Yeah,
how do you decide which one is
right? A judge would have to decide that. They'd have to bring evidence to it, and if there was that dispute, somebody would have to quiet that title, and you wouldn't be able to file that or sell that property until it was fixed. The guy that made the mistake was the neighbor by not doing something called a Liz Pendens, which is throwing in a wrench into your title by saying there's a dispute about the size of the two lots, and until that Liz Pendens is lifted, that piece of property can't be sold. So that guy screwed up. He went and did half the job, which is get his survey, and then he sat on it.
I have a question, Don. Does this neighbor, did he show you the actual survey, or is it possible he just went out there and staked it himself?
No, these were, you know, stake surveys that were performed because, like I said, the previous owner and this neighbor, they had apparently had some disputes in regards to that. And when you have the survey companies both come out using the same maps, basically, they come up with different points and put the stakes in. So I would think that it would have to be resolved by whatever regulating, you know, the regulators of survey companies say, hey, you know, they should theoretically be coming up with the same numbers or the same stake locations, you know, by the county survey requirements.
But Don, have you had a conversation with the neighbor since you bought the place?
Yes, but not What's in regards said? To this.
Oh, well, good, because here's what I would tell him. Get off my property and don't bring this up again. And in the meantime, I would just make it very clear to whoever your agent was that, you know, somebody's been monkeying around with the stakes, and you need a copy of the legal description of that property. And if there's any issues that come up later, you're going to be coming after the title company that they used that sold you the description of the real estate that you own. And you're not going to, you know, going to pay for any litigation cost if the guy tries to quiet the title or tries to challenge the size of your lot there. But if this neighbor comes at you, I'd be like, brother, you need to leave. And that's it. You got a problem, have your lawyer contact me. But, you know, how does it work? When you buy a piece of real estate, the title company guarantees that the legal description that you purchased is, in fact, the boundary of your lot.
Yeah, that's what you go by. And if a legitimate survey company says that wasn't accurate, yeah, then you can take action because you didn't get what you paid for.
And you don't want to be if they bring some kind of a quiet title action, say that you got more than you should have, then I'd be back at that title company and say, well, what did I have you guys doing to guarantee what I was buying, so this, you know, sort of Hatfield and McCoy stuff doesn't go on.
Don, the other thing you could do is next time you talk to your neighbor, say something like, look, man, please don't make me do something that'll send me back to prison.
Right.
That might get his attention.
I have killed the last man over horse yeah. theft.
If I have to kill one more person and go back to prison, I'm not going to be happy. Maybe that'll scare him. Don, do you have Scott's email address?
Yes, I do. LawOfficeSchurman@gmail.com.
There you go. All righty. Good luck with this. Thank you for calling. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. I can get Jim in here if Jim can go in about 2 minutes here because he called in kind of late. But, Jim, welcome to 590 The Fan. Say hi to Scott Sherman.
Yeah, hi, Scott. And Frank. I'm ANPM, of course.
Thank you. Thank you.
Quick question related to property issues like this, too. That is easements. So, for instance, the prior landowner that I bought my property from, it's 40 acres, I bought it in November, the prior landowner had a dispute with another neighbor, and that neighbor of his was supposed to have filed to get an easement off of, you know, at the edge of his property to have a 20-foot easement to go up a hill, you know, and so on, and he paid this prior landowner that I bought this from $3,000, but they never filed it in the county court, in the recorder of deeds. So when I bought this property, I have a clear title without this easement that these people should have filed but didn't a few years before. So they have no way of coming back at me that I can tell, because they're just basically SOL as far as I can see if they didn't file it correctly with the recorder of deeds. Is that correct?
Easements usually run with the land, and they should be recorded, but things involving real estate that are in writing could be judicially sort of fixed. So if they file some kind of quiet title action and say, this easement was not filed, but it should run with the land because here it is in writing, granted by the prior property owner, and the judge sides with them, then you're SOL. But for right now, unless there's a writing that they can produce that says anything about this alleged easement, they are SOL, not because of the filing or the recording, but because of something called the statute of frauds or the SOF, and that is that real estate related issues have to be in writing in order to be enforceable in the courts.
So yeah,
get a right.
Really
get something. Hey, say, come right out and say, send me a writing and I'll take a look at it. So have them send you a writing.
Yeah, because if it wasn't recorded, you know, the real estate agent I dealt with and the prior landowner, they're both chuckling because
they would have looked.
Landowner is basically a jerk anyway, and so I'm hoping they're SOL.
I do too. And if they didn't, but it was something that, you know, they should have filed it. Because when they did the title search, nothing came up like an easement
correct.
Or any other encumbrance. But
correct.
In order for them to be completely SOL, they need to have violated the SOF, the statute of fraud. So immediately ask them, turn over the writing about this easement immediately. Have them email it to you.
Jim, I got about 30 seconds to get out of here. If you need
that's
Scott,
good.
Do
thanks.
You know do you know his
yes,
email
I do.
Address?
Oh,
oh
yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah, no worries.
I'll take
thanks,
your
guys.
I'll take your word for it. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
He didn't even have to tell me. I could tell he did. Hey, we'll do this again next Thursday. Remember that Scott Sherman is brought to you by Dr. Steve Staley. He is a sports medicine physician, real big on PRP. His website, his phone number, all the info is at facebook.com/AM in the PM. Give it up if you would, please, and thank you, Scott Sherman.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you, guys.
Working our way toward 5 o'clock in the news in the Playhouse. No Bill Cleveland today. We'll tell you why a little later. He's now a big movie critic or something. First Community Credit Union is where I'm inviting you to do your banking. I know that's a tough, that's sort of a big thing to ask somebody to do, and I'll tell you why. I don't think most people are sitting around going, man, I wonder where I could go and do my banking, where I could change banks, where I could go to someplace different, because I think most people just settle for wherever they bank. You know, you got your checking account there, you got a credit card and debit card, maybe you got a car loan. You just kind of go along. I'm telling you, there is a great place to bank called First Community Credit Union. Here's how I know it's a great place to bank. It's not just me. Thousands and thousands of people have made this the largest credit union in the St. Louis area. They have over 40 locations. And I know this is not a reason to change where you bank, but they got great fresh popcorn at every location. It's really good. It's like as good as any theater popcorn. I know that's not reason, but you know what is a good reason? Great rates on the loans, great rates on the money that you're saving, the CDs, and just a terrific place to bank for reasons you will never really know unless you join us and become a member. Also, the exclusive sponsor of the yard sale, which is coming up a couple of days, Saturday morning, 7 to 9 o'clock, right here on 590 The Fan. You want to know more? Stop in, say hello, tell them your AM and the PM, or go to firstcommunity.com. It's 5 o'clock at 590 The Fan.
This is Doug Vaughn. You are listening to 590 The Fan, KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, the home of Budweiser.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brian Shook. President Trump's former lawyer Michael Cohen is finished with closed-door testimony in front of the House Intelligence Committee. After emerging from a meeting on Capitol Hill, Cohen spoke briefly to reporters.
Not much I can say other than it was very productive. As I said, I'm committed to telling the truth, and I will be back on March 6th to finish up. There's